I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Folks, welcome back. Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics, joins us. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be with you.
Ron, since the last time you and I spoke, there's been a lot of stuff happen. Politically in this country. But I wanted to start out talking about the demise of Liz Cheney. We've heard a lot of chatter since the election that the Republican Party is a big tent and we welcome diverse opinions and things of that nature. But it looks like they're not very welcoming of a diverse opinion amongst leadership positions within the Republican Party.
Well, I think that's true. Politics is politics, and if you get on the wrong side, you're on the wrong side. But of where the political power structure is. But in the case of Liz Cheney, I think that they have actually made a mistake. And I'm talking about politics here, not about what's right or what's wrong. We can argue right. What's right or what's wrong forever. But in terms of politics, I think they made a mistake because all of these Republicans right now are fixed on primaries. You know, they're so scared that Donald Trump will oppose them in a primary and they can't win. And they're forgetting about the general elections. And what they did here with Liz Cheney, it further cements the public perception among swing voters and independent voters who decide these elections. That the Republican Party is now owned lock, stock, and barrel by Donald Trump, which hurts them. Donald Trump always did very well as a politician based on one simple thing, and that was he was seen by a large segment of the electorate as the bulwark, the only bulwark against the what they would consider to be the wacky left. And so a lot of people, including many Republicans, voted for Donald Trump who didn't like his tactics or his personal behavior. So if they can replace Donald Trump as sort of the bulwark against the left by the Republican Party or new leaders within the Republican Party, then they would have a stronger chance to build the kind of coalition they need. You know, to grow the coalition, to actually have an umbrella, they need to go into the next election and to win back both seats in both chambers of Congress, and then to have a shot to win the next presidential election. But by further tying themselves to Trump and taking his personal baggage, whether you like him or not, it seems to me, is the wrong strategy for Republicans. And what they did with Liz Cheney sort of plays right into that.
I agree. I mean, do you remember in history where a former president in the aftermath of his administration having lost an election would be characterized as the future of the party? Because I don't.
It's not something that that we've seen certainly in modern times. I mean, you did have one president, Grover Cleveland, who lost re-election and came back and won a second term after he was out of office for 4 years. But generally speaking, you know, when presidents lose re-election, they sort of go, you know, put their library together and you know, build their lives as an ex-president. But and you know, Donald Trump all. But in the meantime, he is he continues his dominance of the Republican Party for two reasons. Number one, all of these candidates, Republican candidates for Congress and governor and other positions, but particularly Congress, know that Donald Trump can come into their state or district and raise a lot of money for them. And they also know that in a primary, Donald Trump's endorsement can be very, very effective. So, so they're doing it, you know, to strengthen their position in primaries. And they're doing it to raise money, but what they're doing is not necessarily going to help them ultimately win the election. And I think that's where a lot of Republican leaders, like Mitch McConnell, for example, are breaking from a lot of other Republicans who are tying their futures to Donald Trump.
It seemed to me that, well, this was a pretty quick demise for Liz Cheney, and obviously they had tried to advise her to kind of temper her remarks, and she decided not to do so. And I guess I'm sympathetic to her plight because, as you well know, I mean, I have raised the ire of the Republican Party many times. Where they didn't like a particular political stance that I took when I was an elected official just because I thought it was the right thing to do. I mean, we can have a difference of opinion. We can have a difference relative to our viewpoint of what we think is right and what is wrong. But it just doesn't seem like they can manage that very well. I mean, I for one, do not believe that Donald Trump is the future of the Republican Party. He had his chance. It you know, it worked well for 4 years, but when it came to another general election, it didn't work well at all. We can blame mainstream media. We can blame all kinds of different things, but it didn't pan out. And I don't know what has changed in the environment to think that it would ever pan out again.
Well, I agree with you. I think some of the Republicans who support Trump's comeback are hoping that the Biden administration looks like a disaster come the next presidential election, and Biden doesn't run and Kamala Harris runs, and that she would be a weaker candidate than Biden, and so maybe Donald Trump would have a chance to beat her. I mean, from Republican consultants, that's what they're telling me. But I do think that that the Republican Party has a need to nurture and build new leadership, younger leadership at this point. And look, and that leadership could be whatever they want it to be. It's their party, you know. I mean, they can support a lot of policies that President Trump supported and you know, go wherever they want it to go. But I just think the Republican Party is better and stronger if, number one, it detaches itself from being dominated by Donald Trump, and number two, it presents a positive new governing vision, and it's not just against what the Democrats and Joe Biden are doing, but they sort of lay out a future for the country's economy, for the country's infrastructure, for the country's society as a whole, and how government should work, and I think if they were focusing on that, I think they would be doing a lot better. You know, there are a lot of things in some of these new bills that President Biden has proposed, you know, that they're calling infrastructure, that's nowhere near infrastructure. And I don't understand why the Republicans in Congress aren't having big press conferences pointing out where this money is going and how there's no specific plans to use some of the money. And I think they would be doing a lot better if they just did their jobs, focused on governing the country, and stop the talking points and make the substantive arguments that they need to make for the future. And just, you know, a lot of it gets down to the relevance of Donald Trump. You know, is he going to be the dominant force in the Republican Party, or is he going to, or is, will his relevance disintegrate over time? And as it stands now, he's not doing a whole lot, but all of these other people are going to him and making him relevant.
Yeah, I mean, is it not an admission on the National Party's part that there's a void as it relates to young leaders moving up, our next generation of credible leadership within the party to hitch our wagon? Donald Trump is, by the next election, going to be, what, 78 years of age? I mean, it just seems to me that we're kind of narrow if we've already hitched our wagon to a 78-year-old to be the leader of the Republican Party, and so we double down on that, and there's no other alternative? I mean, that's what it seems like to me. I mean, it just seems like, well, we haven't cultivated much within the party if that's the only option. And that's the only option four years away.
I mean, sure. You know. I think it does look like that. But you know, I really think the raw politics of it is the politics of being scared. That Donald Trump has the ability to defeat a lot of these incumbents in primaries if he wants. And they're just scared to take that chance. And they're scared to take the chance that he can turn the money spigot off and that they can't raise the money they need. So they're all in this. Even some of the so-called new faces and emerging leaders, like people like Nikki Haley, for example, and Marco Rubio, and so you know they've been going back and forth on this. Sometimes they seem to be in Trump's camp, and other times they seem to be trying to get distance from him, and it doesn't look very good for them, you know. So the problem of the Republican Party right now, even though many Republicans love Donald Trump and what he did as president, but the problem for the future of the Republican Party is his stifling of developing new leadership. And now look, he may walk away from it. You know, he may figure, well, he can't win again, and he doesn't want to run a third time for president. Doesn't want to go through it all again. I never always thought he was particularly happy in the job, and he was caught in so many fights and controversies that can't be fun. But so he may ultimately not run, but he may want to keep his position of power, and so that may be the play.
Yeah, you know, I've always adhered to the entity's interest outweighs the individual. And so when I watch this, it just kind of puts I can't embrace it. And I really think,
well, that's not how Donald Trump thinks. You know,
no, I know he doesn't. And that's been one of my biggest rubs with him. But I really believe the Republican Party has now emboldened and empowered Liz Cheney. And she really didn't put up much of a fight in order to maintain her position as well, because I think she recognized and realized they may be doing her a favor because they've created a platform for her that she ordinarily wouldn't have.
And sure, absolutely.
Now McCarthy and others are not going to overshadow her. In fact, my prediction is she's going to overshadow them.
Sure.
Because
she will certainly get a lot of press attention. You know, one of the things.
Absolutely. She'll have CNN and MSNBC and everybody else just, you know, salivating over talking to her, and they have.
Right. You know, one of the things you're seeing when they sort of take away committee assignments or leadership positions like this is sometimes those leadership positions and committee assignments sort of hold people back. You know, they tie them into Washington, sitting by a committee meeting, and they don't have a whole lot of input in what's happening anyway. So, and I'm not saying that's the case, But we saw it with some other people who were their committees were taken away from them, and they were, you know, after it was over, they were raising more money and doing more things than ever before. So you're right. I think Liz Cheney now has stature as a national leader, which before I think she was often seen as her father's daughter, and she just wasn't particularly well known nationally. And now she's known by everybody nationally. And what she does with that, who knows? But she certainly has an opportunity.
Yeah. All right, we got to get to a break. We'll continue this conversation with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Love to hear from you. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk In text line. We'll be right back. Stay with us, folks. We're back with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Ron, in many respects, this sounds very familiar, though, right? Because when you think back to this most recent election, had some of the same thought process as it relates to Joe Biden. When you think about the fact that they talked about, you know, really is Joe the future of the party? But they quickly recognizes that he had national prominence or recognition, and most of the other candidates, if not all of the other candidates, did not. And it was, you know, it was questionable whether or not they could spend enough money in order to bring them to that level.
Sure, but you know, the thing that Biden always had going for him was electability. People thought he had a better chance of beating Trump than these other candidates. And once Bernie Sanders emerged as a serious challenger to Joe Biden, that's when a lot of people and leaders in the Democratic Party said, hey, we better stop this right now because we don't think Bernie Sanders can win. And we think Joe Biden can. The difference with Donald Trump is that if you look at the polling shows that he still has very high negatives. He has relatively low positives. And that's not a good formula to win an election in the future. And so he doesn't have the electability card that Joe Biden had. Now, he has a strong base. He has a base that will turn out in high numbers. And all that's important. But as we saw in the last election, it gets you close, but you're still 7 million votes away, and you're still quite a few electoral votes away. Well, first of all, I agree with this caller 100% when it comes to the national debt and the budget deficit. What we're seeing is a disgrace. It's dangerous. It's been allowed and tolerated and supported by both Democrats and Republicans. The national debt, even though Donald Trump promised he would get rid of the national debt, it went up by trillions during his term of office. And now the debt is going up by trillions again, maybe even more so with all this new spending. So we have a real big problem here, and it is shocking, really, to see neither party making this the kind of serious priority they need to do. Now, in terms of the point of the term limits, I actually think that term limits may be a good idea, but it's the problem is just because you have new people come in doesn't mean they're going to act much differently than the people who are already there. You have to keep in mind that, most of the members of Congress were elected in the last 10 or 15 years. So it's not like everybody up there has been there for 50 years. There's an awful lot of people in Congress who were just elected since Barack Obama became president, since Donald Trump became president. So we have a lot of new people in Congress, even without term limits. And to my knowledge, they're not any more supportive of fiscal responsibility than the people who were there for the hall. In fact, some of the most fiscally responsible members of Congress going back in years, like Bob Byrd from West Virginia Fritz Hollings from South Carolina, and some of the Republicans from, you know, New England and out west, and other Southern senators, were all strongly in favor of balanced budgets and against deficit spending. And some of those people were there for a long time. So I don't think term limits is a solution to the debt problem. I think the solution to the debt problem is for members of Congress to go through the budget, to figure out what they can cut. Everybody spends all their time on new spending and whether we should have new spending. And very few people are looking at the old spending and the old bureaucracies and the old red tape and whether or not it's still needed. I think you could finance a $1 trillion infrastructure bill probably by two different things. Number one, there's probably a lot of unspent money sitting around all over that was appropriated for the pandemic relief that hasn't even been spent yet. So you could use some of that money for it. And you could probably cut hundreds of billions of dollars out of the existing budget. And that could fund a $1 trillion infrastructure program without adding to the debt. And because I think the country needs fiscal responsibility, but I think it also needs public improvements. And I think there are ways to reach both goals.
Ron, the Make America Great Again Action Super PAC committee has just announced that President Trump will hold two rallies in the month of June. They've already scheduled some fundraising events in the state of New Jersey. As you know, he's staying at Bedminster, his golf course in New Jersey for the summer. And they announced that they're looking at four possible locations in order to hold two different rallies, Make America Great Again rallies in the month of June. And they're trying to decide whether or not they're going to do it in conjunction with people that he's going to support in the midterms. So that answers that.
Breaking news,
hot off the press.
Yep.
So, but when we, you know, when we think about, let's pivot a second and talk about President Joe Biden. A lot of the promises that were made, I keep reading articles that say that he's working towards bipartisan solutions. I don't know how anybody can really say that with a straight face. I hadn't seen much of that. Have you?
No, and I think they did it on purpose. I mean, it's clearly been the strategy of the Biden administration to show the Republicans that they can get a lot of what they want without them, and that they don't need them. And that was the strategy with the first pandemic relief bill. It was a big bill, a lot of money, a lot involved with it, and they just passed it with Democratic votes. So I think they were making the point here that you know, the Democrats, you got a new sheriff in town, and they're Democrats, and they've got the power, and they don't need to go kowtow to the Republicans. I mean, that was the point they were making. And as a matter of political strategy, it may have been the right move. But now I think you're in a situation where a lot of these other plans that are coming up are more controversial. They have greater opposition. They have a lot of skeptics within the Democratic Party. And so I think now is the time to try to work with Republicans and do some things. I mean, I think you could do make a deal and get a lot of Republican votes on infrastructure. If you took the things that aren't infrastructure out of the bill, which of course the Democrats don't want to do, but if they did, and you know, it's actually the problem with the infrastructure bill, there's not enough money for infrastructure. There's too much money for other things, and they could come up with a real infrastructure bill, and they could pass that. They could pass in the next few weeks right now, but both sides continue to play these issues, not for the American people, but they're playing these issues to try to kill the other side. And as long as you do that, you're not going to be able to make any deals. But, you know, the bottom line is, no, Biden's administration hasn't reached out except for the meeting they had yesterday, for the most part, on a lot of these bills. And that is a contradiction in what the president originally said. But in fairness, the Republicans aren't reaching out either. And they're both trying to set traps for one another.
Absolutely. All right, we got to get to a break. We'll be right back with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Give us a shout, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. We will be right back after the break, folks. Stay with us. We're back with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Ron, in spite of the Biden administration not liking the word crisis, there are a number of crises on the horizon here for the Biden administration. In fact, they didn't have a good week this past week, and they're not having a great week this week either, from the poor unemployment report where they missed the mark by 800,000 jobs. So now we're seeing a bunch of indications of inflation. There's this gas crisis going on in Southeast and United States. He said they had control of the immigration issue at the border. April's numbers were worse than March. And now we've got the Middle East going a little crazy over there as well. It doesn't look like things are all rosy right now, and you get a better feel for someone as to whether or not they're a credible leader in the time of crisis. Your thoughts?
I totally agree. That's the test of leadership, and the great presidents have performed very well in times of those crises. And I do think that the Biden administration it's had a lot of things fall against them in the last couple of weeks, and a lot of issues that are simmering are beginning to boil over that haven't quite boiled over yet or exploded. Inflation is certainly one of them. The Middle East situation is certainly one of them, and the other one is getting people vaccinated. You know, there's a large percentage of the population that isn't vaccinated that doesn't intend to get vaccinated. And if you're going to have the kind of immunity you want to have and to protect people's lives and to get out of this pandemic, we need to have more people vaccinated. But anyway, the point is that you're right. And trying to call a crisis by some other name is always a mistake. Because it looks like not only are you not dealing with the issue, you don't understand the issue. And that's not good for leaders. And I think they needed to act more decisively on the border. And now the inflation issue is a big thing. And that's going to take a range of fiscal and monetary policy to deal with that. But some of the I'd have to see, but I agree with you. You have to be willing to confront issues, and you have to be willing to call it the way it is, and not to spin it, make it look like it's something else.
Yeah, thank you, Ron, for the call. Ron, I was a little taken aback by that comment the other day. I guess it was he said this, that he shouldn't have to answer all of these questions or something along those lines. I mean, if he doesn't, who does?
Well, you know, sometimes presidents and other elected officials, they get in these jobs. There's a brick flying through the window every 5 minutes, and they're working on one thing, and they just resent when somebody is raising another issue that they may feel like they can get to later. And I suspect it was that kind of frustration. But it's not the right attitude to convey to the American people. And I think, the Biden administration up until this point, I think, has actually handled its public relations pretty well. The president has a 55% approval rating in the polls. Now, that was largely due to he had a couple of point bump up after his speech to Congress last week, and that helped him. So we'll see how that lasts. But But now, you know, the rubber hits the road. There's some big issues that look like they're emerging, and they're presidential issues, issues that he does have to speak on and have to deal with. So over the next couple of weeks, we can determine whether or not he's holding on to his popularity, or whether it's beginning to hurt him. So we just need a little more time to determine that.
Yeah, I was interested that Jen Psaki actually was talking, had made a comment about they had advised the president not to take questions. It seems as though they sit on the edge of their seats when he's finished with his prepared comments or text and opens it up for questions. It seems like the nervous meter goes off the rails when that happens.
Well, you know, Joe Biden, as a number of politicians, oftentimes they talk until they get it wrong, you know, and we've seen Joe Biden do that in other cases. He loves talking. He's not necessarily a disciplined message conveyor because he likes to talk all over things. But generally speaking, I think during the presidential race, and in the early days of his presidency, I think they've done pretty good on message discipline.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot easier to talk in platitudes about aspiration as opposed to policy initiatives and operational issues within government, right?
Sure, absolutely. And as you say, you know, you campaign in poetry and govern in prose, and the prose aren't always so pretty, and you have to get from one point to another.
No doubt about that. Ron, as always, thank you so much for allowing us to take this much of your time. We really appreciate your time and your insight, and have a great weekend, my friend.
Thank you.
All righty, folks. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.